Mr. Robinson, one question has come to mind. In producing these narcotics, we have, back a long time ago, we had the opium, and people just kind of made it, I guess, in the back rooms somewhere.
Well, it was made that way in Europe quite a bit.
Okay. What about the newer drugs after we got into the morphine and the heroin and those drugs? Who were some of the producers? How did we get them? How did the pharmacists get them?
Well, there were several companies around in the early part of the century that produced narcotics, barbiturates, things along that line. The Hart Davis, Sharp and Dohme, Eli Lilly, all of them were producers, along with others. Wyeth Laboratories, as I mentioned about the THC and the heroin cough syrup.
Mm-hmm.
They were pretty much, everybody made about the same thing. And so then they would sell to the wholesalers, and most pharmacies would either buy direct or some of the drugs they could only get through a wholesaler. Eli Lilly, for one, sold them through the wholesaler. So they had to fill out forms,
mm-hmm,
that were required by the federal government. And originally, I said, Treasury Department, then later on the BNDD. Now, those forms then we sent either to the manufacturer or to the wholesaler. They took the forms, filled our order,
mm-hmm,
and sent us the drugs, and then they had to make a recording on their forms as to how much they sent us. When we received the drugs, then we had to put down on the form that we made out originally how much we actually received. So the government's not just double-checking, they're quadruple-checking to make sure everybody knows what's going on. Now, most of the things that were made back in the 20s and 30s were of a generic nature. People think of generic drugs as being something relatively recent, but actually generic just means a general identification name. And you could buy, let's say, Elixir of Phenobarbital, for instance. You could buy that from Wyeth, Lilly, Park Davis, Sharp and Dohme, just any number of different places, but it was all Elixir Phenobarbital.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't have anybody's brand name on it. Oh, there were a couple that put a brand name on it, but it was all the same thing. So it was really the advent of antibiotics that where we first started getting the name identification with drugs having to do with the brand name.
Mm-hmm.
Sulfa drugs, penicillin, tetracyclines, and all of those. Manufacturer receives, when he comes up with a new drug, he receives a 17-year patent on that drug so that nobody else can manufacture it and sell it in the United States until that 17 years is up. Now, sometimes, that's when they first start working with the drug. Sometimes it may be 5 to 10 years before the manufacturer can put it on the market. So let's say it's 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
He finally gets it approved by the FDA. Then his patent is still up within 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives him 7 years to recoup his investment as far as mostly the experimental work that's gone on with it and the development.
Okay. You just mentioned another three-letter, FDA. You were talking about the
BNDD.
BNDD, and then now you're talking about the FDA. The FDA is the Food and Drug Administration.
Right.
When does it come into play?
Well, before a drug can be put on the market in the United States, regardless of where it's produced, it has to be approved by the Food and Drug Administration. They have on occasion goofed in not letting us have very good drugs that we could have made use of years before. They also have been negligent in allowing some things to get in that shouldn't have gotten in, and they've been withdrawn from the market. But the FDA, oddly enough, they do these days have a laboratory that takes the drugs that brought in, they do an analysis, they run their own tests on them and what have you, to make sure they're pure. Used to be, you had to make sure the drugs were pure. Nowadays, you have to make sure the drugs are pure and effective. So that's a good thing for the public, because prior to the being effective thing, there were a lot of things that were sold and a lot of things that were prescribed but were not necessarily effective medication. But it was a drug, but whether it got the job done or not was just a matter of trial and error. The FDA, it does more testing now than it used to. But oddly enough, when you're going to classify a drug, the FDA depends on the manufacturer to classify it. And they can make them change it, but to start out with, the manufacturer indicates whether it's habit-forming or addicting or whatever. Another thing I was going to point out about the generic drugs is that all drugs sold back in the early part of this century were generic in a way, in that they did not have brand names for the product.
Mm-hmm.
So generic drugs are not a new thing at all. They are, we've made more use of the word since some of these brands have run out of their patent. And other manufacturers are able to compete. And every time you have competition, price goes down. Just never fails unless there's collusion, and we hope there's not that.
So, just one more quick question. So that the 17 years patent kind of gives the companies a little bit of chance to recuperate. The higher cost gives them a little chance to recuperate some of the expenditures for coming up with this drug.
Right. At least that's the story they tell us. Anyhow.
Okay.
Right. And I noticed in our notes here we talked about methadone. Heroin addiction has been treated with methadone to help with addicts. It's kind of funny to me, because we sold methadone when I first started working in pharmacy. It was a classified drug. It was just the same as morphine, as far as the classification was concerned. The idea on the methadone seems to be that it gives an addict an opportunity to buy something that will keep him from hurting. In other words, he doesn't go into the withdrawal syndrome. But it's just trading one addiction for another.
Mm-hmm.
Because the methadone is just addicting as the heroin, my way of thinking.
Mm-hmm. But it does help wean some of the addicts.
Well, what it does is it gives them an opportunity to buy or have given to them a drug so they don't have to go out and rob, murder, and whatever to make enough money to buy these drugs on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And they can get straighter, they can live a straight life and clean up their act.
Eventually maybe even come off the methadone?
Yeah, if they can. But that takes a lot of self-will and determination. It's effective, but only if it's closely supervised. Kind of funny, most of the addicts rather have, or the ones that I've known, the nurses and doctors that I've talked to about the methadone program, say they prefer the liquid methadone rather than the tablet. The liquid seems to act faster.
Mr. Robinson, you've been discussing a little bit about our addictive drugs and the narcotics involved. And you've used the term BNDD, which means stands for Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs. Nowadays, we hear about the DEA, or the Drug Enforcement Administration. What has happened from the time the BNDD started to now where we hear about the DEA?
Well, it's mostly just a matter of changing of names. They wanted to strengthen the DEA of the administration and the Bureau, and they changed the name from Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs to Drug Enforcement Administration, but the structure of the Bureau remains pretty much the same. I really don't know all the ins and outs of it, but the Drug Enforcement Administration has been a lot more active as far as since it's been improved on, especially in the area of prosecution for drug crimes. You know, we talk about drugs of addiction, but we should never call a drug itself as causing addiction, because it's the people who use it that cause the addiction. The drug itself is merely just sitting there waiting for somebody to use it or just not use it, and because of its overuse, it becomes an addiction. One thing we should distinguish between is the class 2 and narcotics and the class 3s and 4s and 5s and the Drug Administration schedule. The narcotics are addicting in the true sense of the word. The body becomes physically addicted to the drug. It cannot function properly without it. Now, that's the reason there's such a terrible withdrawal syndrome from narcotics. By the way, talking about narcotics, one that we didn't say much about so far is Demerol. And an odd thing about Demerol, it came out in the late 40s, and they did not put it under the Harrison Narcotic Act at first. They just said, here's a drug that will cure addiction. People can use this and not get addicted or hooked on it. But I've gone Demerol into one of the worst. It's almost as bad as heroin in some people. Demerol and all of the opium and opium derivatives and, things like methadone, dilaudid, things like that come under that class 2. And opium itself and morphine are included. Class 3 is things like codeine and aspirin or codeine and Tylenol admixtures where the doctor really doesn't have to sign those prescriptions. He can just call them in now. Whereas before, with the old Harrison Act, the doctor had to sign the prescriptions for, let's say, imprint number 3, which was a real popular one. Now, we use mostly Tylenol number 3 for mild to moderate pain, and they can call those on the telephone. They cannot call class 2s in. Class 2s also include all the amphetamines and Ritalin. The class 3s include the Imprenor, Tylenol, and codeine combinations. And a number of the barbiturates are included in number 2 also. Things like Seconal and Imbutal are barbiturates, and they belong to class 2. Now, class 3, where you have the codeines, that's probably the most common thing in it is the codeine combination. Class 4 is all of your, we classify them as benzodiazepines. It's things like Librium and Valium, and I think we mentioned before Halcyon, and several of the things that people are prescribed sleep for. Mm-hmm. Now, another one that's in that class 4 is phenobarbital. Phenobarbital is used extensively for people who have serious nervous disturbances like epileptiform seizures or epilepsy itself, along with other drugs. Phenobarbital is classified as a long-acting drug. As a matter of fact, one study found that if a subject took 65 milligrams of phenobarbital. 6 months later, they could still find a trace of phenobarbital in the body. Now, that's as opposed to the short-acting barbiturates like Cefental and Imitel. But they're class 2, and phenobarbital is class 4. It's really not very addicting, not very habituating.